Now we come to the gospel, which will put together all the themes and sub-themes of the readings we've had so far. You remember now, you know, we had in that first reading, after we looked at the theme, you know, it was a prophecy of Zechariah. The part that was most, is I'll pour out this spirit, you see, of grace and so forth. That's Zechariah 12 from the first. Now we're in Luke 9, 18 to 24. Once, this translation has, when Jesus was praying in solitude and the disciples were with him, he asked them, "Who do the crowds say that I am?" They said in reply, "John the Baptist, others Elijah, still others one of the ancient prophets has arisen." And then he said to them, "But who do you say that I am?" And Peter said in reply, "The Christ of God, the Mashiach." Christ is from Christos, is the Greek, anointed. Mashiach is the Hebrew, anointed, you see. He rebuked them and directed them not to tell this to anyone. There are some very interesting words, hard to figure out. You see, epitimesis, rebuked. He uses this word to rebuke demons, Luke does. Or he rebukes the storm. Now, why is he rebuking these guys? You see, there's always something for biblical scholars to write an article about. And there will be until the Lord comes back. I think he's seen to that. So, Augustine says, there are lots of places that are hard to understand, so we don't get the idea we got it all. Because we don't. Okay. So they said in reply, "John the Baptist, others Elijah, still others, and one of the ancient prophets has arisen." Then he said to them, "Okay, but you, who do you say that I am?" And I imagine all the guys were just quiet. Then Peter said, "You are the Christ of God." Or, ho Christos uteu, or that would be the Messiah of God, you see. He rebuked them and directed them not to tell this to anyone. And then he said, "The Son of Man must suffer greatly and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the scribes, and be killed, and on the third day be raised." And then he said to all, not just the disciples that are there, to all, "If anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. For whoever wishes to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will save it." Now, this is a very Lucan account of this prediction and the reaction. This is where actually and you can see it if you look in the gospel. This is Luke 9. And this confrontation, or this, whatever you want to call it, you see, happens. We start on verse 18. Right after the multiplication of the loaves in Luke. He organizes these events in a way different than Mark and basically Matthew. So once it says, and that's what the text says, "Que genito, and it happened that he was praying alone." And the disciples came to him, were gathered around him. And he asked them, "Who do the crowds say I am?" And they answered, "John the Baptist." He's dead. Well, somehow he must still be alive. There's never been a figure like John the Baptist. Or Elijah. You see, that's the... John the Baptist was Elijah. Elijah. Or one of the ancient prophets has arisen. Couldn't possibly be a prophet in our day. It has to be somebody from the past. You see? Then he said to them, "Who do you say that I am?" And Peter says, "The Messiah of God." You're the one that's been promised since Abraham. You're the one all the prophets spoke about. Now, Peter, he's an enthusiastic fellow, but this is obviously a work of the Holy Spirit, to stand there and say, you are the one we have been waiting for almost 2,000 years. You are Jesus. You're the one. You see? And he rebuked them. Luke's words are hard to figure out sometimes. Epithymesis, I told you. That word, he applies to exorcising demons. He rebukes the storm and quiets it. Now he's rebuking Peter. This is amazing. I mean, it has nuances, but, and he says, you see, rebuked them and directed them not to tell this to anyone. And then we start. Now, in Matthew, if you remember at this point, Peter takes him aside and says, oh, far be it from you, Lord. Remember? He predicts his passion and resurrection. And Peter takes him aside and says, oh, Lord, that's not fitting for you. And what does Jesus say? Out of my way, Satan. You're doing Satan's work right now. You don't understand my Father's plan. He's tough. Luke omits that. Seemingly. Because these things were well known, and they were being read and recited at the Eucharist. The people would gather, and these things, before they were put into a New Testament, you see, they were, and so it was, some places were reading Luke. Okay. He said, the Son of Man must suffer greatly and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the scribes, and be killed. And on the third day, be raised. That's astonishing. Think about it. They're going to kill me, but I'm going to rise again. You know, we're used to this. We've heard it for 2,000 years. What do you think these guys, they're construction workers, they're not theologians. Fishermen in that day would be about the same class, you know. Usually like a lot of construction workers, they're really good guys, you know. Not the most polished, but good guys. I used to work on construction, and I know these guys, and I used to really like them. Still do, for that matter. Killed on the third day. Then he said, without any reason to say this, except, I mean, you don't have that interruption by Peter, you know that this is not fitting for you, Lord. And that's when Peter hears, out of my way, Satan. Now, we have this instruction. If anyone wishes to come after me, you see, he said to all, to everybody. There's no exception. Well, for you, you don't have to follow me or suffer. You can just be a Christian right there, comfy. Don't worry about it. No. He said to all, if anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross daily, Luke adds, and follow me. For whoever wishes to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will save it. And that last line sets the tone. How do we lose our life? So many ways, so many ways. Besides dying or getting killed for the faith, here's a guy, he's working in an insurance firm. The boss says, you got to tweak some of these things. You got to, you know, we got to make a little more money out of these things. He says, I can't do that. That's dishonest. You're fired. Okay. Then I'm following. You see? But whoever wishes to save his life will lose it. But he who loses his life will save it. Maybe not now, but for all eternity. The Lord is going to say, you remember that day when you told your boss you wouldn't? Well, I've never forgotten that. I've never forgotten that. And we can talk about it from time to time. We have eternity to talk about it. And so that's what he's saying, you see. If anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. Now, what does that mean? What does it mean to follow him? It means to be a disciple. Now, I don't know why, but this is an instinct. St. Francis was preaching in a town in Umbria someplace. And when he got done, he had been so stirring that he's walked out of the town and the whole town followed him. We're going to follow you. Leave everything, house, pots, everything. We're going to follow you. And then Francis said, you know, that can't be right. You're supposed to take care of your kids. And that's when he invented the third order. You could be Franciscans and stay home. That's third order. The other, my brethren, they got to walk around with me and all that, you know, which is a great privilege. You know, St. Francis was such a happy man. They tell stories about him taking two sticks and playing like a violin and singing and dancing as he walked through the woods. That's a pretty happy man. And so you see, he's saying here, whoever wishes to save his life will lose it. Whatever loses his life for my sake will save it. And so the guy who says, I can't do that, boss, and loses his job, I don't know whether he's going to get a double-paying job right away or any, you know, but I know this, Jesus will never forget that. Never forget that. And when he dies and he sees the smile on Jesus' face, he's going to say, you remember that time your boss told you and you would rather quit and risk, and you did? I remember that. I remember that. Come. And he gives him a big hug and says, now it's my turn, you know. You know that song, for me I will press on in running the race? And it goes on like that. It's a beautiful song. I love that song. I'm going to do what I can and hope I don't bungle it too badly. So I'll hear Jesus say, come on in. You know, you weren't great, but you were good enough. Come in. So that's what this is all about. And it's the prediction of the passion. And that there you see, why the first reading and my treatment on it is about redemptive suffering. Jesus, you see, in the act of love in which he died, you know, carried suffering that would crush any other human being. And he offered it all to God the Father. And he grew. And the whole world was there, joined to him. And all who want to be with the Father forever, they just have to accept that gift and join him. That's all they got to do. And then try, because you get overwhelmed after a while with how much the Lord loves. And you want to keep doing stuff for him and obeying him more and more. It's disastrous all the time. You know, we're so far behind what we ought to be. But at least we can try. And that's, you see, that's the redemptive suffering. A mom who has to stay up all night because the kid is sick. See, that's a share. If she does it for love, does it for... And how people are going to get surprised, right? I was hungry and you fed me. I was in jail. I was in jail. And you came to see me. Lord, when did we ever do that? Whenever you did it for the least of my brothers, you did it for me. You see? I'll never forget that. Because it's not only those who have redemptive suffering who suffer with Christ. Christ is also suffering in the poor, marginalized, neglected. In fact, there's a line in one of St. Augustine's homilies where he says, I am radiant. I am glorious. I am here in heaven, but I promise you, I still suffer with all the poor. I still suffer with all the neglected. I still suffer with the orphans. That has not changed a bit. So if we alleviate that, we alleviate the sufferings of Christ. Amen.